So it's not very often you make a hobby into a job. I'm very, very fortunate.
From the Coin Podcast Network studios in Portland, Oregon, this is Six Questions with Emily Burris and Ian Costello.
So should we start by talking about the fact that we're back in the studio?
Yeah.
Or do we want to talk about aliens?
Tough call. Let's first start with the fact that we're back in the studio.
We're back in the studio. This feels kind of weird.
Yeah.
Looking forward to being back in here every once in a while, a little bit more often. See some familiar faces around. It's still a little bit weird for me to be walking around downtown and parking again, but
parking is so much fun.
Yeah, parking is so much fun. Maybe we're moving towards something that feels like we might be getting out of this. I still have my fears about the Delta variant and the danger coming along with that. But no, it's nice to be back around, even if I'm still wearing a mask to go into Starbucks here and there.
Definitely. It is nice to see people out and about. And it certainly feels like I know everyone is just so eager to get out and do things. I don't know about you. I've definitely had a little bit more social anxiety than I thought I would have. I went out to a bar with some friends over the weekend for the first time in a long time. And mm-hmm. and it was actually, you know, I think I went a few places in the spring where it was still every other booth and it didn't really feel like a bar. It was more like a restaurant where you could grab a beer. This was like out at a bar. People were walking around. No one had a mask on. You know, it was open to full capacity. And I was like, wow, I did not expect to feel a little anxious about this.
I hear what you're saying. I went to the Timbers game this past weekend, and we were at Kells on in Northwest there, right by the stadium, beforehand, and it felt good to be there, but I also I felt like I was almost a germaphobe. Here I've been for the last 18 months using hand sanitizer mm-hmm. and washing the heck out of my hands and wearing a mask and that kind of thing, but you get in around a group of people again for the first time and I felt myself kind of, mm-hmm. I know this is a podcast, so nobody can see what I'm doing, but I can
describe it to you. Ian is cringing and physically just like drawing his arms into a little ball. Yeah. That's kind of how I felt too. I'm like, well,
and I don't
want
to be that way.
Yeah.
It's just going to take some getting used to and getting back into the swing of things mm-hmm. a little bit. So now we can talk about aliens.
I was going to say, I don't know how to transition to this, to aliens.
No, just straight
but,
to aliens.
Do you think that they're real?
Yes.
Me too. cool. Now that we can both take our tinfoil hats off and, you know.
I find myself in the camp of, I'm guessing visitation here is probably not something that's happened, but I definitely believe there is intelligent life out there somewhere. Yeah. My high school science teacher, she had this big thing about water.
Yeah.
That it would take water, it would take water, it would take water. And since I got out of that high school class, we found water on the planet next door and then another planet next uh-huh. door. And it's like, we know three of the nine in our solar, or three of the eight, if you don't
Sorry,
count Pluto,
Pluto,
have water or have evidence that they had water at
right.
one point in time. That really increases the chance that there's something out there.
Something somewhere. I've just always kind of been of the thought that, like, how self-centered are we going to be as humans to think that in this entire galaxy,
yes.
like, don't get me wrong, I think we're pretty cool. I'm a big fan of Earth, really enjoying living here most of the time. But I think it's just kind of crazy to think that in all of the planets and all of the billions of miles of space, that there's nothing else out there that could sustain some form of life. I mean,
you look up at the stars at night. I was at a planetarium in college, and it was explained to me that the stars you're actually looking at night, although we think they're other stars, most of what we see is actually other galaxies mm-hmm. that are full of millions of stars. Mm-hmm. And then the person at that planetarium explained to me, and I don't know if this is factual or just a guess, that there are likely more planets in our universe than there are grains of sand on Earth.
There's so many things about space that are hard to wrap. It's hard for me to actually wrap my brain around that and to even try to visualize, you know, how vast things are. But I remember being a kid looking up at the stars too, and there's this sense of like, whoa, like it's just, yeah. It's so cool. There are just, it's hard to find other things that, that do that in the same way that stargazing can. So, and I guess, you know, we should tell everyone the reason that we are both just like being absolute nerds about space this week. I think everyone kind of has space on the brain because earlier this week we saw the launch of Blue Origin's New Shepard rocket, which is, Jeff Bezos, the guy from Amazon. It is his space venture. He chose to launch on the anniversary of the Apollo landing because for him, that was, as a child, the moment when he just became fascinated with space. Watching man go to space and get to the moon, it was like everything stopped, right, on Earth to mm-hmm. watch that moment mm-hmm. over 50 years ago. And it turns out it was also a stop you in your tracks kind of moment for the person that I got to chat with this week, for Jim Todd. He's the director of space science education at OMSI. And this was something for him that not only did it inspire just this lifelong love of space and astronomy, but it became a personal bolster for him as someone who was born with hearing loss issues and was deaf from a very early age. You know, to see that was possible made him feel like anything is possible. So as a child, he learned how to read lips and now is in charge of this program at OMSI that inspires so many other kids and their love of space. And all of that, you know, just came from this place of watching what we had achieved and feeling like anything is possible. If we can get into space, like, what can't we do?
I've had the pleasure of talking to Jim for other projects. He's an enjoyable interview and he's fun to talk to. It's so fun, and we run into these people a lot during these interviews, but it is so fun to listen to somebody talk about something they love with their entire life.
So much. It's literally right. Impossible to get him on another topic. It will always go back to space.
To space.
And I'm okay with that because I could talk with him all day. I feel like I learn so many things every time I chat with him. But yeah, it's so cool to see just how much he loves it and just how important Portland and the Pacific Northwest is for him and for that field of astronomy and stargazing and how much we can learn simply from where we live. Hi, Jim. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Thanks for taking time to chat with me. I know this is a little bit longer than our usual like morning show interview.
Oh, not a problem. I'm happy to do this.
I'm super excited, especially this week. I'm all jazzed after yesterday's launch and stuff. Got to talk about space. So,
are you signed up to go on one of those launches?
Oh, you know, it's a little out of my budget right now. But hopefully in the future, maybe they'll get it down to a few $1,000s instead of a few $1,000,000.
Well, just a few thousand, you know, just all 4 minutes of joy.
Right. It is. It's like a glorified amusement park ride for billionaires. But it was super fun to watch, that's for sure. But first off, just for anyone who isn't familiar with what you do, tell us a little bit about your job at OMSI.
Well, I am the Director of Space Science Education at OMSI, and my role here is to provide unique opportunity to visit the planetarium and watch our live shows or show offerings that we do daily. And so I manage the planetarium and also manage the OMSI Star Parties, public events, been with the museum now for 37 years. And so lots of diversity, lots of great stuff that happens here. So It's primarily my job, you know, is to get people excited about space science education in a lot of different ways.
You know, I have memories as a kid, not of getting to go to OMSI, unfortunately, because I didn't move here until a few years ago, but visiting other planetariums and going out stargazing in the desert in California and just looking up at the stars and being so enamored by that idea of outer space. I'm curious, when did that first kind of take hold for you?
Well, that's a great start because yesterday was the 52nd anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. And I was 8 years old. I watched the moon landing. And at that time, I was living in Nebraska. And I watched the moon landing on my parents' black and white TV. And I remember vividly like yesterday. And it was pretty much right there at that point in time that I was really interested in space science and started learning the stars and started to basically self-taught myself all my life. And my parents pushed me along and my grandparents had a cabin in the mountains of Colorado. And I remember going out, stargazing out there, the wonderful viewing area. And more importantly, personally, is that it meant a lot to me as a goal that John F. Kennedy set it off in 1961 as a goal to send a man to the moon. And basically his response, because it's there. And so personally, with my hearing loss and what have you, that was really a motivator for me that anything possible.
In what way, like Kennedy's comments just really kind of took hold for you in applying it to your life?
It did, very much so. And I used that as kind of a motivator, saying that, you know, because it's there. Just like yesterday, you mentioned that we have the launch of Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic, because it's there. I mean, it's a goal. They wanted to do it. They spent their own money on it. Why not? Okay. And so what happened over time for me is that I self-taught myself. I wanted to be a teacher, a classroom teacher, and I had background in computers and had the love for the stars, and a perfect opportunity came along at OMSI. And with all of those parts there, it was a great match, and this is my way getting close to NASA, getting my way close to space, and I love sharing my passion with the public. And so that's how I really got all started, was just that one moment in time when I was 8 years old, and I was watching these Neil Armstrong come down the ladder, and it was a goal set by John F. Kennedy in 1961, because it's there. So
yeah,
I used that as a motivator.
So you mentioned your hearing loss. This was something that you have had since you were a young child, right?
Since I was born.
Okay.
And there was one of those that my parents just kept me in the mainstream. And, you know, in Nebraska, there wasn't really anything that was an option for, you know, deaf children to go to a deaf school and what have you. So I'm absolutely delighted that they kept me in the mainstream. But I always had a love for science. And so my uncle used to work for NASA, and he was part of the Apollo program. So he would send me all these materials about space and what have you.
Oh, wow. So he was like the coolest uncle ever for you, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. The whole family, really. My parents, uncle, grandparents. And so as soon as I get up in the mountains in Colorado, I'm up there late at night, observing and what have you. But I'm just very fortunate that something came along where I wanted to be a teacher, that I get a chance to work at OMSI. And it's like, this has been a great ride. It really has.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. You originally came to OMSI not to be in charge of like this space program, right? You kind of came in a different role.
I started at OMSI as a science educator, and it was an internship that was supposed to be only for 1 year. And halfway through my internship, my manager quit, And so I basically had to take on a role right away. But that was the computer lab. And
that's a lot for an intern. Just
exactly.
Here you go.
Yeah. And then after that, they liked me so much, they asked me to stay while I was working on my undergraduate. And
very cool.
And 37 years later, I'm still here.
That's awesome. What is it about OMSI and about the programs there that has kept you around for almost four decades?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a mission that OMSI has is to put the wow in science, mm-hmm. be hands-on, it's the engagement, being a resource. We're OMSI is naturally an icon. And we have a planetarium that you can find nowhere else. It's the largest planetarium in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And we're a resource, and we want people to come and get excited and learn about the night sky. So I work with the public and work with the media, and it helps to get that message out, is that we have here in Oregon a pretty unique dark sky compared to the rest of the nation. And so we take that for granted. And we have a lot of good examples where we have a astronomy club, Bell City Astronomers, which I was a part of at the very beginning, and that their membership of 600.
Wow.
And one of the largest in the nation. And so we have this wonderful relationship with them. So all of that, it's just there's just a unique place where you don't necessarily get the education in astronomy in the classroom, which is not taught very much. Mm-hmm. So they come to OMSI, and we try to meet all the standards and all the expectation that here, this is where you can learn about the sky, and this is, let me show you how.
Right? Yeah.
And so that's where it's unique in that fashion. And OMSI really has been kind of a leader in the field and been able to offer the unique programming that you would find nowhere else. And so I feel very blessed to be a part of that mission all these years. And I think we've been very successful at that.
You know, it's so interesting when I talk to people about space just about, anything that's out there, right? I feel like there's usually like two different types of people, right? There's people who, like me, get really excited and want to learn about it. And some of the stuff is like really hard to wrap your brain around, but I try because I think it's really cool. Or there's people who are kind of ambivalent, right? And they're like, it's out there. It's not down here. I don't really want to know, or it stresses me out. I mean, why is it important to learn about what's beyond our atmosphere?
That's a good question. It maybe goes back to the classroom, how much is being taught, how much is being talked about. You know, the internet is full of information. Mm-hmm. Some of it is misinformation. Some of it is good information. And so you have some of those people that are purely science. There are some people that don't have a clue what's happening. Right? So at OMSI, we try to make sure, I try to speak in a way that is down at the ground level.
Yeah.
I try to interpret it for them, right? So they can understand where some people really can get carried away and have no idea what that person is talking about. Right?
Right.
So we find different ways, not necessarily verbally, but visually. The planetarium has this place where we can visually show you what it's like. Use your imagination. Imagination leads to knowledge, right? And the knowledge leads to imagination. Mm-hmm. Is that all that happening where the planetarium is a unique environment that, and some people, they don't have an understanding. They can't grasp something they can't touch, or we can't go to.
Right.
So we have these models. We have all of this wonderful opportunity to display that in a variety of different ways.
It's always interesting for me when I learn about some of the stuff, or I think about, when you really stop and think about, you know, we are in this city, on a continent, on the Earth, in a solar system, in the galaxy, right? It's like, it's hard to wrap your mind around. And for me, looking at outer space and all these different things, it always just is so humbling. It puts such a perspective on how small we are. What is something that you've learned in all of your years of studying space that has maybe changed your perspective or the way you view us or our world and our place in it?
Well, we're working in the planetarium had the role because one of the things that I'm able to do there, I can take the audience on a ride through the universe and give them the perspective. And that there is a feeling that we're alone. I mean, then we're the only thing that is possible to have life. That's true. But when you look out there and look at the amount of data that we have collected alone in the last 15, 20 years, and, you know, I've been very fortunate to be part of this exponential growth of the space mission that have happened over my lifetime, where started out with the Sputnik, then go on with the Gemini. It goes on and on, the Voyager. And the things that we have experienced here at OMSI, and, you know, with the public, we do public events and show them what a wonderful achievement that we've been able to achieve year after year after year.
Yeah.
Being able to gather more information about what's out there. And let alone that just in the last few years, we discovered that there are nearly 10,000 planets out there, and there's probably millions more. Mm-hmm. And so to give you that kind of perspective, saying, well, you know, they have the same ingredients as we do. And mm-hmm. so is there a potential for life out there? Absolutely. And so that's exciting. And it just gets getting better and better. So what really hits it is that being able to use your imagination on the knowledge that we have gained and understanding our universe, all the way starting from our home planet Earth and then going beyond that. But then you come back into Earth and say, gosh, this is our only home. We need to take care of it. Right? Yeah. And we're a very fragile planet because what else do we have? And so we not only need to understand our universe, but we have to understand ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, we don't have another one close by that we can go hang out if things go south here.
Yeah, and that's why there's always this fascination to explore space. That's why just the last few years that we got SpaceX, we got the Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic. Billionaires are trying to reach out to the going out into the space. And, you know, the vision of living and working in space is still very strong. Mm-hmm. It all started in 1961. Say, we're going to go to the moon. You know, we're going to put a man on the moon. We're going to go on another world. And it's still carrying on. And the momentum is still very strong.
You mentioned some of these, you know, private space programs that we've seen really rise up in the last several years. Of course, we're talking, as you mentioned, the week of the Apollo anniversary. We just watched Jeff Bezos and his three other crew members become the first, you know, civilians up in space, the oldest and youngest people to ever become astronauts. And that all follows, you know, just a couple weeks ago, Richard Branson was doing a very similar thing with his space flight. This billionaire space race, as it's been dubbed, you know, because we got Elon Musk over there doing stuff with SpaceX, too. It's been met with some real mixed reaction, especially this week. People, you know, Jeff Bezos, like he had kind of a tough public relations time, especially on social media. You know, a lot of people sitting here looking around saying they have all this money and there's all these things we could be trying to fix on Earth. Why worry about going to space right now? I'm curious, what's your take on that? I mean, do you think that there is future benefit to trying to have this commercial spaceflight program?
Well, you bring a very good point. All of that, and talking about billionaires getting their own ride into space. And
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't change our life.
Right. We get to watch it. It looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. It really does. And boy, that looked like a fun ride, but that only lasts for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
If I could, I would hop on a spacecraft to go to the International Space Station. Mm-hmm. And that's me, but that's because there's science involved in that. There's benefits, there's spinoffs. For every dollar that we put into space with NASA, we get $3 back.
Wow.
There's a lot of benefits that improved our lives here on Earth. And that's the reputation that NASA has. And so NASA quite often get praised for that. And look what we have gained from the experience that NASA have been doing. But when you look at the private enterprises, where we have SpaceX, which has done a phenomenal job, I will add, of partnering with our NASA. Mm-hmm. But we have Origin and Galactic, Virgin Galactic, not their own, for their own good, but what it does, it really kind of lays the foundation that, the technology is there, and the opportunities are there because it's there. Just like what I was saying in 1961, because it's there. Will we ever benefit from these missions? It's hard to say. I can't say we will, because there's no science involved with it. Other than you get to go 50, 60 miles above the Earth to come back. And that's an expensive ride. But I much rather orbit the Earth, study the Earth, understand the Earth, find the problem, you know, something that would benefit us. And so it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. My fear is that with the private enterprise, that something's going to happen. NASA's prepared. They do their homework, where Galactic and Origin, they've been pretty lucky, but they're playing it safe by not going in orbit. They just go up and down. It's low risk. But you saw how SpaceX started out. They had a few problems. Mm-hmm. NASA has well, but going to space is tough. It's risky, very risky. And hopefully nothing will happen. I'm not saying that it will, but I wouldn't put my life on those two enterprises, because they've been pretty lucky, but I'd be nervous. I would put my life on NASA more than anything, because they've done it and they know how.
Yeah, they certainly have more of a track record at this stage of the game.
Yeah, and sure, NASA has had their problem, and it's expensive. Well, now keep in mind, you'd be amazed how people are always super excited when NASA has a new discovery, like Mars Perseverance, landing on Mars. It's a lot of helicopter for the first time. We launch a helicopter on another world.
Yeah.
And it just goes on and on and on. And so anytime we do an event here at OMSI, people love space. They love NASA. And so that's pretty exciting. But the reaction with Origin and Virgin Galactic has been mixed.
Yeah.
You know, the first question comes to me, would you do that, Jim? And I said, well, it would be a fun ride, no doubt. But no, I wouldn't risk my life on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'll let a few years of space tourism happen before I decide to get in line. And granted, I could not afford to get in line at any point in the near future for what it's currently costing. So
now that's going to be the next question: is space travel in the future? Yes. Can we afford it? Probably not.
Yeah.
I can't fathom the idea. I mean, there's all these Hollywood films which fantasize space travel.
Yeah.
And go up and down the list. And so I think that's part of it too. But we've been fantasizing going to the moon since the 40s, even going back to 1900. Jules Verne came out with the first movie talking about going to the moon. And so it's not going to stop us from trying to find ways to go into space. It just won't stop.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I chat with Jim about aliens. Are they out there? And why should we be so worried about keeping things dark at night?
The Coin 6 weather team has the most accurate forecast in town. certified by WeatherRate. Coin6 Weather, watching out for you.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
Okay, so I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here for a second. You mentioned, you know, the potential for other life out in the other galaxies that we are now discovering. Oregon has a pretty rich history, I think, of UFO sightings and a culture of UFOs here, people who are constantly looking for them. And we've had this slow drip of information, especially over the last few years, from the government, from, you know, different military entities talking about different UFOs, or what are they called? Are they, it's not UFOs now, it's is it UAP? What is it?
Yeah.
Unidentified aerial phenomena. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it's trying to get a rebrand because everyone's like aliens. Obviously the question of could other life exist out there is yes, but is other life currently checking in on us? Weigh in on the alien conversation for me.
That's always going to be a question. We've always had that, you know, ever since Lowell was looking at Mars, vision that there was life on Mars, because there's channels and roadways and what have you, War of the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's always a fantasy that aliens have invaded the Earth or occupied Earth or watching Earth and what have you. You know, my answer is, I haven't seen any evidence. I mean, I don't see any real proof. So can we answer that question? No, we can't. Until we can actually say that we have actual proof. And then there's always the conspiracies where the government's covering up, or we actually have footages of this and that. And, you know, the UFO is going to always be there, right? Today, tomorrow, had been in the past. The fascination of whether or not we've been watched, we've been invaded. We just don't have any evidence. And as far as anybody communicating with us, we got radio telescopes to actively seeking signals from other worlds. You would think that if anybody's visiting us, they want to talk to us, not hide. And vice versa. We hope somebody's hearing us, communicating with us. But the thing is, space is a very big place. As Carl Sagan would say, everything is so far away. And the current technology that we have, it's not possible to send a hello and get a hello back. It would take years and years and years. And so has somebody been talking to us? I don't see any messages in the inbox yet. it's always going to be this fascination that we're being watched or we'd be invaded, all of that. And my answer is, well, I'd like, if you know, let me know. and everybody, of course, goes to NASA and say, well, NASA should know. And so their response is basically the same as mine. And it's that, we don't have any evidence. We don't see anything to support that. A recent video shot taken from a fighter jet pilot or something like that, showing what looks like a spacecraft. Nobody's been able to confirm or deny whether or not that was a UFO or not. Now, science is a very interesting field. It can be messy. And you're trying to interpret something. You're trying to explain something. And especially nowadays that everybody has a cell phone, dash cam, it's more and more recordings are occurring with fireballs, which we have seen numerous times, but we're seeing more and more of it on film. Same thing with the fighter jet. We have the ability to capture things, but we're trying to interpret it. And so often I get requests from people who have these doorbell called Nest. I saw something on there. Can you explain it, what it is? And I sometimes it's a matter of perspective and interpretation. It's like, compared to what? It makes my job interesting, really, is that I'm delighted that people call and ask what an interpretation. But sometimes it comes down to is that, well, I need more evidence. I need more facts. Let me check. And then we can see how many other people have actually seen it. It's just not just one comment. We need a whole audience to be able to witness something that made it valid.
It's always fascinating to see something and go, wow, that's weird. But then oftentimes there is some kind of explanation for it. So it's nice that we have you at OMSI as a resource for that.
Yeah, and sometimes kind of go, gosh, I hope I can figure this one out. but the recent one was kind of disappointing that we had that in March, that the SpaceX debris fell over Portland.
Yeah.
And right at that moment, my phone would nonstop. But what concerns me there is that we're going to possibly see in the near future, we're going to see more and more of these large debris coming back to the Earth. And some of these are not even put out by stuff like SpaceX. They're not indicating to us this is going to perhaps happen.
Yeah, with the one earlier this year, people will remember it was just this like curtain of lights. It almost looked like a firework, kind of streaking across the sky. And then we learned that there were pieces of this, rocket. I think it was a rocket capsule that was like the size of a skyscraper that were probably going to land in the water. Odds were good that it would go in the ocean, but not zero. And the thought of like a giant piece of space junk crashing down on a city is terrifying to me.
And their attitude is, oh, the odds are small. That's going to hit anybody or anything. You have a greater chance of winning the lottery than getting hit by one of these debris. But the point is, it should be notified. What's interesting, the space test doesn't have a communication director at all. And so when people are asking me, can you contact SpaceX? I couldn't. With the SpaceX, what's going on, the Starlink, there could be 30,000 of these in orbit in a few years. 30,000, the potential for disaster is very high. Space junk is a big problem.
Yeah, I've heard about this, like space junk. I think there's a name for it, theory. And I like, stop me if I'm being part of any like woo-woo miscommunication thing. But there are people that are concerned that we are going to reach a point where we have so many things in orbit around our Earth and so many things up in our atmosphere that if something goes wrong, if something's miscalculated, you could have a crash that could generate almost like a chain reaction, and we would essentially be trapped on Earth in a field of space junk debris. Is that a legitimate possibility?
It's very legitimate. And also, something to think about, too, that we're coming into what's called a cycle 25, the solar expansion. We're going from a minimum to a cycle expansion. We're going to see more and more solar flares, much more from the sun. And if we get the right kind of flare aiming towards the Earth, it can knock out a good number of these satellites permanently. And then we can start seeing a cascade of problems. You have to understand that there's close to 150,000 satellites in orbit now. Only one third of them are functional. One third.
What?
The rest of them are just space junk. Okay.
That's crazy.
So, what are the potential? It's pretty high, pretty high. And so, I've often talked about this. I also teach astronomy at PCC, and we've had this classroom discussion Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there's a liability and accountability that comes into play for each country. There's the international law, going back to that fireball, that anything that gets to be launched into space, they must be made a part that can burn up upon Earth entry.
Huh. Okay.
We got that, and most of it did burn up on that incident happening earlier this year. But there were pieces that did fall in Washington and perhaps Oregon. Found it to 10 ton debris. And then we saw China just launch something, and it was a booster rocket that came down south of India just a little bit later after that. But there was no really like, oh, don't worry about it. It's not going to hit you. Well, you know, I think that there has to be some concerns about these space debris. And I wouldn't be surprised that we'll have another large fireball that we're going to see in the sky. And did we know in advance as to what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Well, we have some ideas that some debris will burn up. We get that. But I think there needs to be more management as far as being able to communicate that there's a potential for these debris to come over a populated area.
So do you see this being a potential issue that the Space Force is going to, you know, have to take on? I know when the previous administration, you know, unveiled this Space Force, I mean, cue the Star Trek jokes, cue all the, you know, everyone was like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And, you know, I think maybe the PR around it, you know, could always be a little better. But do you see a need for us as a country to have some expanded military capability in this realm of space and outer atmosphere and in all of these areas?
Well, my answer is on that. I was concerned that NASA was going to get involved with this.
Right.
NASA is all about science, right? So the Air Force got involved with it. Okay, that makes sense. But I'm sure that each nation know more than we will ever know as far as what kind of military advancement is happening in space. Mm-hmm. Every nation wants to have an advantage, right? And so it's going to be very costly and also very controversial, regardless. Do I see a need for it? Well, it's not science. I don't have really a lot of say on that. Space Force is that's very military side of things. And if it's meant to be to keep us safe, we'll see. It's a matter of time.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit and come back down to Earth. just to, you know, kind of get a better sense of who you are, too. You know, you're a lifelong Portlander, right? From Oregon, born and raised?
No, actually, I was born in Colorado. And,
okay.
I lived, put it this way, before high school, my parents, we moved 12 times across the country. So
wow.
I wouldn't call myself an Oregonian. I moved here in 1975.
Okay.
Just before high school. And then my sister and I decided to stay put in Portland, which I'm very grateful for. And I would call myself now kind of a adopted Oregonian, so to speak.
Yeah, I think you count. I think you've earned your membership into the club. So yeah. What was it about Portland that really just pulled you in and kept you here?
Well, kind of in a way, we got tired of moving.
As a military kid, I get that.
And my father used to be the vice president of Portland State University. And so that's where I went to get my degree at Portland State there. But, you know, Portland is unique. It's a beautiful country. It's beautiful. You got the ocean, you got the mountains. And I have to say, too, that Portland is a very highly educated community. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of it, too, that what I find that working in Portland is that people have very high expectation. They want to know more. They're very educated. Mm-hmm. But I'm here to stay here in Portland and love Portland. Had a lot to offer. And I've also been blessed that Oregon has some of the darkest skies around the nation, especially in Central Oregon. And so we have that going for us. But Portland is now my home.
Yeah, it's definitely, it is neat to see the dark sky movement really take hold, especially out here in the West and in lots of parts of the Southwest and the Northwest, and the National Park Service, you know, trying to be cognizant of that too, converting different facilities to make things friendlier for the night skies. I mean, how important is it that we maintain that ability to see?
It's very important, and it's a good thing to have a conversation about it, even though we got a growing population, and we see the effect that light is diminishing our view of the sky. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, there was actually a study made that most Americans who live in the city, nearly 60% have never seen the Milky Way in their life, 60%. And that's because they live in the city all their life. They don't get out to the country, being able to see the beauty of the nighttime sky. And so, which is astounding. I mean, just think about 60%.
Yeah.
And East Coast got a lot of major populated cities. And so there's very, very few outlets out there in the East Coast where they can actually see the Milky Way. And then so that's part of it too, but it also affects the migration of the birds and the turtles, especially now with the LED lights are coming out, which is fantastic compared to the old analog bulbs, fluorescent mm-hmm. bulbs, and so on. The LED lights are great, but it's even brighter than the old analog, and it put out so much blue in the spectrum.
Yeah.
And so it's confusing the birds, it's confusing the turtles, making the sky glow worse than it is getting better. So we have to educate the public and the political community that we need to learn how to shield the light. The benefit and of what we see that with or without lights, crime will go up or down. We can hopefully get back to recovering our night sky, but it would have to be a big movement, educational wise, which there is, to mm-hmm. try to preserve our night sky by shielding the light, pointing the light down, using different types of bulbs, and so on. So the very big movement, and with the satellites that I mentioned, Starlink, which is providing a wonderful opportunity for Wi-Fi worldwide. Mm-hmm. Which is great, but at the same time, it's polluting the night sky with these satellites because the observatories are now seeing these satellites coming across their image in the field of view. And so that's a problem as well. And it's not necessarily related to light pollution, but it is in far as preserving our night sky.
Yeah, and our ability to research a lot of it, certainly. It's interesting. Yeah. And I know having been a fan of camping and hiking and being outdoors my whole life, getting out into Eastern Oregon, there is nothing better than getting out to those dark areas and getting to see that at night. So is camping, hiking, or are these hobbies that you enjoy, or how do you spend your time if you're not hanging out at OMSI?
Well, I love sports. You know, I enjoy watching sports and what have you, but I'm also like you. I go out camping, hiking with my family, spend time with my family. I enjoy that very much. And, you know, we can't get away from astronomy when we go out of camping and what have you. So my entire family is very much into astronomy. I've met my wife at OMSI, and so she's part of this wonderful experience to join the night sky wherever we go. So we do a lot of that. I very much enjoy just spending time with my family, getting out and about and travel, visiting other parts of the nation and the world for that matter, and exploring what other people are doing, other planetarium and other science centers, but just seeing what kind of program they're doing out there in other parts of the world.
You sound like me when I go on vacation. I like watching other local news channels to see what the what the news is like in other spots. But I can tell that it is truly just a lifelong passion for you. And I just think it's so cool that you've been able to make a career out of it and help inspire others in that as well.
Yeah, so it's not very often you make a hobby into a job. It really is. I'm very, very fortunate working with wonderful people in the past and currently that had a lot of great mentors. And I enjoy mentoring other people as well, getting them excited. And it's just a joy to me to see that their experience of working at Omdi, they go on to doing bigger and better things. Being future teachers, they are also promoting astronomy. That's what it's all about, is sharing the passion and getting people excited about the future. And I feel like my job has been very complete when I see people learn something from what we have gained so far. And being part of this community here in Portland, we're pretty well educated about the night sky, and so you'd be surprised, and there's always room for more. And then the example is the eclipse in 2017, August 21st. Prior to that, there were very few people have ever seen the eclipse. And then after the eclipse, now we have 1 million eclipse chasers.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, that one happened before I got here. So I was still in Florida. I was not in the path of totality. I was pretty jealous that all of my colleagues up here got to check that out. It's very cool.
Yep. And I also appreciate folks like you getting the word out, helping to help educate the public, help them understand what is this all about. So having this wonderful partnership with the media is really essential for us to try to make people understand but get excited about the night sky.
Well, we're lucky to have you here, Jim. I mean, it's awesome to have such a wonderful resource with you and OMSI. And I learned a few new things today. I learned something new every time I talk with you.
It was great.
Yeah, thanks again. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. And well, until next time, I'm sure we'll be chatting about some cool space stuff again soon.
Okay, and I'll see you on the next space ride into space. So we'll go up together, shall we?
Maybe they'll give us a 2-for-1 deal. We'll see if they roll out any coupons. I'll give you a call.
So do you find yourself living in constant fear of something falling out of the sky and hitting you?
I'm so concerned about getting hit by space junk. No, it's not a constant fear, but I will say, ever since I learned about that whole like chain reaction field of space debris enveloping the Earth theory, that one's a little unsettling to me. Not that I ever plan on getting off of this planet, because I don't have millions of dollars to get a seat on Jeff Bezos's rocket. But it's a scary possibility. The more things we put up into space, the more potential for risk and how inhibiting that could be to future space exploration.
Which is crazy to think that we've put so much stuff up there that is basically, well, not basically, that is worthless and floating
space
around
junk.
And it's just right. And it's going to become a danger. And out there too, we've got the International Space Station.
Right.
We've got talks that the next level of space tourism is people starting to build hotels out
right.
there. Like, but no, there's just this field of like, it's like the island of plastic in the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, the Pacific garbage patch, but in space.
Right.
Truly.
Right. It's the space garbage
right.
patch.
Right. But first you just have to navigate this field of space debris. I mean, it is something that you feel like you saw in like a 1950s sci-fi movie, but it's totally a possibility, you know, to have issues with this in our lifetimes. I just think it's, you know, I think it's crazy the more we learn about what's out there. And, you know, I talked with Jim a little bit about just the fact that I know some people are either like ambivalent to it or get overwhelmed by it. I've talked to friends who are like legitimately scared of thinking about space because it's like overwhelming. And I guess I get that point of view. But, you know, at the same time, I just think the more we learn about our place in this, in the cosmos, you know, the more perspective it gives us about ourselves. And we look out what's out there and we realize what we have here and how we probably need to do a little better job of taking care of some of it.
Caring for what we
have. Yeah. The human race has become, you know, kind of hoarders in the sense of we can't get rid of a lot of things. And it's really kind of gumming up the works on land and in the atmosphere.
Bezos, Blue Origin. I can't remember if it was a raffle or a lottery for the third. Well, what would have been for the fourth seat? If you won, would you have gone?
I think I would have asked if I could go on like the third or fourth trip. I don't think I would have strapped in for number one. I don't want to be a record holder quite that bad. I do think that, you know, there is some risk to space travel. And as it becomes, if it becomes more privatized and more commercialized and space tourism, I don't know. There's questions there. Would you have gone right away?
No. No. But I think I will, whether it's 20 years or 30 years or heck, at the way things are accelerating right now, it might be five years. I envision that throughout the course of my life, it is going to become, I probably shouldn't use the word affordable. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be normalized. Mm-hmm. I think we are going to be, you and I, when we are out talking to people or meeting with people, I think we're going to be running into people that are planning to go to space or have been. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is crazy. Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's crazy to think about. I mean, at this point, I would be cool with like a Jetsons flying car. That would make me happy. I'm good to start there. But the thought of getting to go to space in our lifetimes is pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. Not going to space this weekend. What are you going to do?
I will be staying here on Earth. Just getting out and enjoying some summer weather. I feel super lucky that, you know, a bunch of our state is on fire and it's somehow bothering New York City more than Portland.
I saw some pictures. New York doesn't look good.
The air quality there is crazy right now. Yeah. The fact that they've had to issue air quality advisories this week. I think I'm just going to try and find something out and about in the sunshine.
Good.
Enjoying the weather. How's the popcorn ceiling? We did promise a weekly popcorn update.
A weekly popcorn update. We do need some sort of sounder, like
we don't have the copyrights for that.
That I heard Disney's litigious. The popcorn update. It is coming down slowly, but we're getting there. More popcorn is down this week than there was last week, which makes me happy.
That's good. Then you know at least it's not regrowing on your ceiling.
It's not regrowing. And hopefully, you know, by the fourth or fifth version of the popcorn update, there will be no more reason to have a popcorn update.
Just when we've perfected the sound effect.
Right.
That's all right.
Have a good weekend, Emily.
You too, Ian.
Thank you for listening to Six Questions on the COIN Podcast Network. You can find our entire podcast library available on demand on COIN.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.